like a rebel bitch. Journalist, specialist, predator and survivalist. Spit heaven, fire from his lips. Burn the same driver.
Listeners, to time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people will turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to get involved in the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live audio at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream at that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live audio there also. We're streaming at abibitumi.com. That's abibitumi.com/timeforanawakening. They stream from Ghana. Or you can download the TuneIn Radio app to any of your devices. TuneIn Radio is a free radio app. In that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection right into your vehicle. Again, it's Time for an Awakening radio program with a live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, you can type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening Media is also there, always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening Media, interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also, check out that Time for an Awakening Marketplace and our partnership with the BB Toomey. Always interesting things in the marketplace all the time. Various African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 7:08 here on this Sunday, February the 18th edition of Time for an Awakening. Our guest this evening, scheduled to join us in conversation, author, professor of politics and African American studies at the University of San Francisco, Dr. James Lance Taylor, is scheduled to join us this evening. As a member of the San Francisco African American Reparations Advisory Committee, Dr. Taylor will be joining us to update our listeners on what has been going on in reference to the legislation being pushed by black lawmakers in California in reference to reparations. And we'll talk about other things with Dr. Taylor. But before we get started with our program this evening, we'll be right back after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Not a Wu-Tang-a. All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 7:14 here on the Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. Before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum. In Philadelphia, 7th and R Street, Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
As best can be. As best can be. Everything is moving along. Things are getting better in some places. And a lot of things are going on.
Richard, we were scheduled to have Dr. Taylor join us this evening, and so far he's not here yet. So, yeah. I mean, it's no problem. We could just move forward with open forum. Until he joins us. If he doesn't, then we'll just reschedule him, no problem. It's going to be some interesting, I'll title it that way, very interesting upcoming guests coming on Time for an Awakening to share with the audience what they're doing. Richard, you're aware of some of our upcoming guests, and I'll kind of leave that for the next couple of weeks to kind of solidify things before I announce that to the rest of the Time for Awakening audience. But I think it's going to be some interesting upcoming conversations coming to the airwaves, Richard.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm looking forward to it myself. And in the meantime, I guess this is an interesting moment as we move into, you know, Black History Month and moving into, you know, the national recognition of President's Day and moving into just the whole choices around the election and whatever. I think it's or at least I'm being stimulated around certain thoughts in relationship to that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a lot of our people are caught up in this this back and forth in reference to this presidential race. The propaganda has started to flow more readily on black media. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago when Obama met with had a luncheon with Biden, and I think Clyburn was involved. Because of the falling poll numbers of black support for the Democratic Party and, you know, some of the things that they were probably discussing. We weren't in the meeting, but, you know, ways to kind of pump up the Democratic Party and their position, so to speak. And I forgot the woman's name that they hired a black woman to kind of head their media relations
outreach. Yeah,
yeah. I think I sent you that, but I don't have it in front of me. To her name, I don't have her name. Maybe the listening audience is aware of it, but you could see now that they're working their plan, so to speak. Because I've heard some advertise and money is involved. So it's money to different elected officials. Probably community organizations that's going to push the Democratic Party line. I've heard some new advertisements on the Black Talk radio station here in this city, Philadelphia, in reference to the Biden administration and what he's supposedly doing for, well, I don't know whether it's necessarily for black people, because some of the things that they're mentioning in the advertisements, Richard, is general stuff that everybody's supposed to get as a taxpayer.
Right, right, right.
Go ahead.
No. I was just listening to the Vice President Harris, a speech he gave in Munich, a conference in Munich, Germany, and talking about, you know, America, you know, positioning the American, you know, need to maintain global dominance, as she put it, and was outlining especially how the domestic side, the domestic things to, you know, to validate, it sounded like, because this is the NATO group, you know, and trying to justify not for America not to take an isolationist position, but how she used the American looking inward, what has happened over the last 3 years, and their plans, economic plans, to make America strong internally, to validate America's role externally as a global leader. I just thought that was interesting. And I did get, I got a minute clip on that, you know, if we ever get a chance to get to it, to kind of like show, you raised this point of things that they should be doing, if we'd be doing for citizens, but this is what they're trying to say, how they're making America strong to be the global leader. And then my question comes, well, of these things, How is Black America actually benefiting from it, if that makes sense? You know what I mean? Like, you lay out these things that's been happening, and you're in this moment asking for the Black vote, needing the Black vote. And over the last 3 years, it sounds like these things, not only are they things that have been talked about before, but I'm not sure evidence that the black community can, you know, in general, can benefit from them.
Well, if you're talking about foreign policy, the black leadership don't really talk about foreign policy with the black, their black constituents. So the discussion of foreign policy comes generically among black people, or maybe among certain organizations that want to talk about it. But generally, you don't hear that talked about, that discussion come up with black elected officials and their constituents.
Which is interesting in itself, because the presidential office itself, its primary directive is those two things. Well, national security, right? The president is the commander in chief of the armed forces, all the armed forces, for national security, where it's the Congress and the Senate, Congress with the money and the Senate, you know, as that backup, that's supposed to deal with the domestic and, you know, the financial side. So when they keep pushing for the presidency, you know, to your point, it's interesting that the foreign policy isn't talked about, but that's one of the major roles of the presidency. You know, the position of the president is foreign policy, you know, and how the military is, you know, role in relationship to national security. And here, the black community and its representatives, we don't really have a lot of discussion about that.
You know, this what we were going to touch on with Dr. Taylor, and hopefully he'll still join us this evening, in reference to reparations. If you notice that conversation, Richard, now, it was a hot conversation when Biden ran against Trump the first time.
Right.
It was a controlled hot conversation because white lawmakers prior to that wouldn't even talk about it. But they talked about it. They talked around it during that presidential campaign because it was on the minds of black people, period, whether young and old. And it's still on their minds. It still haven't left. But if you notice, the conversation is not there among.
No.
Oh, I don't expect it to be there among whites, but it's not there among the black elected officials. I knew you noticed that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not. I mean, and the media itself, I mean, even as different, you know, local or state initiatives for these advisory, you know, what they call
advisory commissions.
Yeah, advisory commission. You don't get the kind of stories about, you know, the local story. I mean, in the national arena, you don't get like what's New York or Philadelphia. You know, there's no follow up on it. I mean, if it's mentioned at all. I mean, New York might have got a glimpse, but I don't think there's been no major follow up. Even with the bump in California, they, you know, just what recently just made the announcement about, you know, that the black legislators were able to put the bill on the in the congressional, you know, chamber for the discussion to take place and the vote to move towards the vote. There's no follow up of how that's, you know, how that's being done, how that's being handled. What's the different political representative's view as the bill is now a part of the legislative body? So I agree with you.
The it was a published report in the Boston News just the other day, a couple of days ago, and I want to reach out to Brother Siddiqui up there in Boston because I might be wrong, Richard, but I'm more than sure that somebody from the Nubian leadership circle is probably on this commission because Boston established a commission similar to what is being established in Philadelphia here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether you read what came out. One of the spokesmen for the Boston reparation. Let me read this. It came to a published report in Boston. It was a Boston TV station, Boston 25 News. But I'll read it for the listening audience. Black grassroots group to demand cash payouts, reparations from the city of Boston related to slavery. A grassroots group of black activists are demanding cash payouts from city of Boston and reparations related to slavery and centuries of institutional racism, the group said in a statement on Friday. In the statement, Reverend Kevin Peterson, founder of the New Democracy Coalition and the Boston People's Reparations Commission, said that the group is asking city officials to fully commit to writing checks to compensate black Bostonians in a move that will be part of a comprehensive reparations project. The reparations effort in Boston will not be domesticated into simple historical studies and meaningless rhetoric about equity and diversity in some future time, says Peterson. We call on the task force to fully commit to writing checks and to compensate black Bostonians and fiscally support the creation of new institutions in our community. The press conference will be held on this topic at 2 p.m. on Saturday, which was this past Saturday, in Nubian Square. You remember what Brother Siddiqui said about that, Richard?
Right.
The establishment of that. That's why I'm figuring that somebody from the leadership circle, well, we're going to reach out to him and this brother here also to get him to kind of come on the program if he wants to. It says during the press conference, Peterson will announce specific initial monetary payouts to Boston's black residents, organizers said in the statement. Peterson authorized legislation that successfully resulted in the city of Boston apologizing for the participation in the transatlantic slave trade, the group said in a statement, that led to the creation of the city's task force on reparations. The city task force was established in 2022 by their city council, according to the city's website. The task force is made up of 10 members, including two youths. According to the city, the task force will focus on working with research partners to release a study on the legacy of slavery in Boston and the impact of the descendants today. Now, it says the task force last met on February 6th, and the minutes from the meeting is on the website. Now, Richard, you noticed something here from this article. It says that the city's task force, according to the city, the task force will focus on working on with a research partner to study the legacy of slavery in Boston and the impact of on its residents today. Now, that's what the city said.
Right.
But if you notice, with this, the leader of the group, this the Reverend Kevin Peterson, he didn't say that.
As far as having a direct payout as a part of the...
No, as far as the study.
Right.
The city said that they want to study it and all that.
Right.
Let me go back, but just in case you didn't catch it. This is what he said in reference to what they're doing. Boy, I lost my place here. Okay. The reparations effort in Boston will not be domesticated into a simple historical study and meaningless rhetoric about equity and diversity in some future time, says Peterson. We call on the task force to fully commit to writing checks that will compensate black Bostonians and fiscally support the creation of new institutions in our community. So that's not what...
Right.
So it's a difference there.
Right.
And that's why it'd be good to... I guess we'll reach out to them and either have him on. Like I said before, maybe Brother Siddiqui and some of the members of the group is involved. It's two youths involved, too, which would be excellent to have them on to kind of discuss what's happening there. Because the same thing that's happening there is happening in other cities and will be happening here in Philadelphia.
Right. And that what gets me is the new institutions part of it, because, new institutions, just the whole organizing effort. Because, you know, I always say that, I mean, I don't take away from the cash payments or just the historical understanding, you know, that each area is able to magnify as far as the historical narrative of what happened to people of African descent in their particular area, because each area history is different, right? Those things are like critical, but if it seems that we need to create new cultural relationships and new institutional formations in order to make it so it's long lasting, you know, as a part of the repair process. And that, to me, that's one thing that the, you know, a report can't do. You know what I mean? Like you just can't bring in historical experts in different areas. Yes, they can pull the data together, but how on the ground people are organizing for sustainability after the report is done, because that becomes the real critical moment, just like what we're seeing in California, which is magnified, because now it has to go to those legislators, right? And they have to be able to get it past those districts, whether they're represented by whites, call them liberal or call them conservative or call them, you know, what's that other one, libertarians. They have to get the yes from them in order for the bill to get passed for those what things that were outlined. And if they don't, it could be just like how H.R. 40 was. How long did H.R. 40 sit? Because those legislators in the committee, which is even smaller, didn't agree to you know, in the process to push it forward. I think that that's important. And that's why, this moment has to be about organizing, grassroots organizing for the sustainability, because that gets into the politics in making this demand. The leverage we need to make this demand come through, whatever those things that we ask for, demand, are to be met, whether that's cash payments or beyond new organizations, institutions, or other a better oversight on the institutions that are already there. You know, like the educational institution in some places in Philadelphia, they get over $1 billion. Well, what is the outcome as far as Black educational attainment, you know, with that kind of money being spent? You know, that's I think that's important.
And listen, not only that, Richard, let me say it like this. I think just as much energy as we're putting, and see, I think it should be more, and I agree with you, more cohesiveness in what we're doing, because I think it kind of plays into the enemy's plans for us to be striving about this separately, if you know what I'm saying.
Okay, right.
Philadelphia striving separately from Boston. Right. Boston striving separately than New York.
Right.
That plays into, that works to their benefit.
Right.
I think it should be more cohesive unity in what we're doing. And some of these national organizations, such as NCOBRA or others, that need to work together. Because in Cobra, December 12th, and the Nation of Islam have been working together. And they've been working together since 2002 or beyond that, mm-hmm. when they attended that World Conference on Racism. But some of the other groups, even some of the newer groups, we have to establish grounds where we're working together if we want the same goal. And it seems as though that the same goal is what is wanted.
Right.
And right. as much energy as we put into striving for this, we have to put just as much energy into alternatives, Richard, backup plans, in case this doesn't come through like we want it. And I think you understand what I'm saying.
I would say, Elliot, that has to be it has to happen simultaneously.
Exactly. Because Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, no, go ahead.
Because the people we're dealing with, see, it's not like we don't have a track record. We don't have an historical account. This is new. It's not new. This right. is not new. We're dealing with these same people who have oppressed our people for over 400 years and have lied continuously throughout history on stuff they're planning to do for us. And then we've witnessed lying to Native Americans with treaties. I mean, over 500 treaties was broken by these same people. So the history shows that they have lied. They are deceivers. That's not a racist statement. That's a true historical statement. So if we're dealing with the people that have deceived and continue to deceive, then we can't go in thinking that all of a sudden they're going to have this epiphany where they're going to do what's right. We already know that if you damage a man, I don't care what this nation claimed that they're a Judeo-Christian, whatever term they want to use, nation. And whatever biblical text you use, even prior to the biblical text being written, the moral laws of our people show that if you damage a man, you're supposed to restore him. And sometimes you restore him two or threefold than what you damaged him. So if that's the case, then we already know that what these people did to our people needs to be repaired. But if they don't do it or refuse to do it or push back against it, which you can already see the pushback, then we got to have a plan B. We can't go in hoping that they'll do the right thing and then turn around and they don't. We'll just be repeating, constantly repeating history. And I'm quite sure we don't want to do that as a people.
And that repair, we have to be engaged in it.
Certainly.
More than ever, because not just of the damaged part, but we can't look at them to be the healers.
Exactly.
And when it gets to, you know, especially from the political perspective, that healing process has to be what is the machinery we need to create in order to be able to engage in the political process, not just for reparations, but as you said earlier, for those resources that we should be getting as citizens just because we're citizens. It shouldn't be that what's going to be offered is things that we're going to get, we'll be getting, even if it's cash payments, because of, as a part of the repair, because then that overlooks the things that we should be getting as citizens, like the funding in the educational institutions. That should be given, or like being able to have access within the jobs as the economy change, that we should already be able to have a workforce that's ready, that isn't just doing the service level jobs, or like being able to have the entrepreneurial or development, the business development, and the capital development in order to stimulate business developments within the spaces where we live to increase the value. That should be a given. That shouldn't be something that's a part of the repair, if I'm making any sense.
Certainly you do. In fact, it's funny you mentioned that. I want to touch on some of the things that you're talking about in reference to businesses and stuff that we're supposed to get as citizens. But now it's being couched like they're doing black people a favor. I want to get back to some of that you're saying, Richard. But before I do that, let me. It was a published report in the Atlanta Capital News. And they should be talking about this on black media. But again, they're not. And it's not. It's not surprising that they're not, Richard. It's not surprising that they're not. But I'm going to share this audience, this with the listening audience, because you should go back to your, if you're involved in the church. In fact, if you're involved in any type of spiritual or moral group or organization. Go back to the leadership there and ask them their position on what's going on. And the reason I'm saying this is, let me read this, Richard. This is a published report out of Atlanta Capital News. It says, Atlanta black and Jewish faith leaders divided over calls for Gaza ceasefire. Dozens of black clergy members participated in an interfaith luncheon on Thursday of this week at the First Iconium Baptist Church in East Atlanta. In attendance were faith leaders from various Christian denominations as well as Muslim. Noticeably, they were scant participation from the third Abrahamic religion. That's how this author or the writer puts it. The goal of the gathering was to thank the more than 200 Georgia pastors who signed onto the November letter to President Biden calling for a ceasefire in the war between Israel and Hamas that has killed tens of thousands in Palestine and Gaza. Now, Richard, let me say this. That letter or that petition has been signed so far, the reports I've read, over 1,000 black pastors nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
They had this dinner here in Atlanta to thank the more than 200 that signed out of Georgia. Now, I don't know why it's so, you know, why the disparity, why over 1,000 pastors and 200 of them signed out of Georgia. What's wrong with these other cities? What's wrong with Philadelphia? Where's the black? Can you got several mega churches here? You got several. I've asked some people that come in my place of business. Have you talked to your pastor about this? You know, number one, they don't seem to know nothing about it, which is normal. But they didn't come back with no answers. But I haven't heard any of the pastors here in Philadelphia, which is the fifth largest city, back this or say that they're in support of it.
Right.
But let me go back, because there's something a little more important here in this report. It says, and I'm going to go back to the paragraph I just read. The goal of the gathering was to thank the more than 200 Georgia pastors that signed onto the letter to Joe Biden calling for a ceasefire in the war between Israel and Hamas that has killed tens of thousands of Palestinians in Gaza. Hold on a second. That call, according to some in attendance, exposed a rift between black Christians and Jewish clergy members, many of whom have long been on the same side of battles for civil and human rights in Georgia. I'll continue to read. Reverend Timothy McDonald, First Iconium pastor, said local American, the American Jewish Committee leaders were among the dozens of faith leaders invited to the event. But McDonald says he's never got a response from the group, illustrating the depth of the disagreement. This is a quote from McDonald. I've reached out, and I'm through reaching out to them, McDonald told the Capital B in Atlanta on Wednesday of the local Jewish committee. That's not what they did. That's not what they didn't. It's not what they did or what they didn't do that they have not called for the ceasefire. The American Jewish Committee is a global nonprofit advocacy organization for Jewish people. An official with the group told Capital B that it did not receive an invitation. So somebody's telling a big lie, Richard. Reverend Timothy McDonald, of the black pastors, said that he reached out to them and he ain't doing it anymore.
Enough is enough.
Enough is enough. They claim that nobody ever reached out to them. And it's kind of odd that all these black pastors are there and Muslim clergy is there. Let me read a couple of more paragraphs. In an interview with Capital B, leaders on both sides noted that the division over the war thousands of miles away risk damaging the voter coalition in Georgia that helped elect Democrats to the White House and the Senate in 2020. But they also stressed that their division reflects the religious beliefs of those and many of their followers. Black preachers in Metro Atlanta, including McDonald, said that they support a ceasefire in Gaza for humanitarian reasons in keeping with a Christian faith, not to mention calls from their congregants, meaning the people was demanding it. It says more than 200 black pastors in Georgia signed on to a letter calling for a ceasefire and related, a ceasefire that ran in the New York Times. That upset Jewish faith leaders, many of whom congregants who support Israel's military action despite the staggering death toll. McDonald refused to name the Jewish leaders. He said called him about the issue last year. But he said that they invited him and other black pastors to view raw footage of Hamas' October 7th attack in Israel. McDonald says that he declined to view the footage because it was an exercise in propaganda.
Mm.
And this was a quote from McDonald. Are you going to show what the response was and the actual footage the response to the Palestinians? McDonald recall saying to the Jewish leaders, I'm not coming to that because that's not what I'm about, viewing propaganda. So now he admitted that they called him to come to these functions. In fact, I think I mentioned on the air, I mentioned to you in private conversation that I had two leaders. One, a black Jewish leader here in Philadelphia, and another brother, church in leadership, said that the Jewish committee here in Philadelphia invited them to come down there when they had all those black leaders saying that they stand with Israel, and they refused to do it. So he said that he was invited, which I totally believe.
Right.
And a man admitted that he was invited, but he said that he didn't want to participate in propaganda. He wanted to hear from the other side, not just to show me footage of what happened, supposedly what happened on October the 7th. So when he states here that he invited them to this meeting, they turn around and say, oh, we didn't get invited. Who do you believe, Richard?
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't get the memo. It's on my desk, or it was on my desk, or they didn't pass it on.
Now here's another thing for the listening audience to consider. You have 200 black pastors that have signed this petition out of the Georgia area. 200. And they said in the statement that they were signing this based on moral grounds, and plus their congregants wanted them to get involved. You remember me reading that, right, Richard?
Right.
This American Jewish Committee, or AJC, if the listening audience recall, because they're not hearing this on their local black stations in their cities, if they have it. So if you hear it, you might have heard it here, or maybe some other, Carl Nelson or some other shows that has conscious conversation. But if you remember, Richard, that AJC is the same one that Warnock went to when he said he's going to promise to be the best Jewish representative in the Senate. If you remember that, Richard. I'm sorry. It looked like I lost you. You still there?
Yeah.
Okay. You remember that Warnock appeared to that same group and said that he was going to be the best representative for Israel in the U.S. Senate.
Right.
Booker appeared to that same group, along with the AIPAC, that AJC was there, several of the groups, those groups. Jeffrey Meeks, I played what he said to that same group on this air, his voice telling what his allegiance to that group. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
So now you got black pastors here that were encouraged by their members to sign this thing, asking this government, not just Biden, this government to stop supporting genocide against people over there for moral reasons. The pastor said that. For moral reasons. the same way Dr. King came out against that war in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
So you got a rift. This writer here of this article says it's a rift between Jewish leaders and black pastors. No. I don't care about this rift. It ain't no rift as far as I'm concerned. Because right. I don't think that those people got... I'm not even going to talk about them. That they're out of the conversation as far as I'm concerned. The rift is between black leadership and black pastors and their constituents. Because you got three so-called powerful black leaders that have already publicly sworn their allegiance to Israel. So what is that saying? What is that saying about the people there and what they want and what this leadership wants? Was Warnock there at that dinner? Where I know he wasn't there because he's part of the Democratic Party. So he wasn't there. Those pastors down there need to start calling those people on the carpet. Warnock, even though Booker's not representing their area, he's still representing black people. Even though Clyburn is not in that state, he's still representing black people. Jeffrey Meeks, and there's a bunch of others that need to be called on the carpet in reference to their support for this. They didn't even send any representative to the meeting and then told a lie talking about they wasn't invited. I don't believe that for one bit.
Mm. But it goes to the critical part of the agenda, the various agendas within the black community. I mean, you know, that's the other thing. You know, that has to be reconciled because the Israeli issue is just, you know, as far as a foreign policy and or even the moral aspect of it. It's just one aspect of how black people see and have seen how we project our vision, our worldview on, you know, the world stage and the difference between, you know, these parties and how they see and now having more and more black representatives in it. But it goes to the point that you made earlier when you were talking about, you know, the different reparations efforts, the different happening in the different areas, because amongst, I'm going to say us, this is where the coordination and connection between us has to occur, because in order to be able to put together a political infrastructure that puts our view, you know, within the political machinery. I mean, but if we're disjointed, it's these people, these black representatives, and they are, as they said in 72, they are getting the vote, right? And we have to compete with them, in my opinion, compete against them in relationship to the consciousness and the moral positioning of the black community. And that's a groundwork kind of thing. I'll keep saying that part because it's clear they're aligning with the established political order that is, I'm going to say, anti-black. And they're aligning with an imperialist order, an empire order, which is anti-people of color. And these are black people. Within the political party. And it can be construed that they represent the black, all of the black points of view. So they can just say, well, we didn't get the memo. I think that's important to bring up.
Yeah, well, you know, we can't sit by idly anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be a collective voice to push back against these people, Richard, because they're damaging. They're damaging our people, and they're giving the world view of blacks here in America a perception that they buy into this foolishness. But it's showing here from what these listen, and everybody should criticize some of these black pastors for some of their behavior over the years, and especially these ones that all they want to do is be money grabbers. But some of these ones with good intentions, and there's a lot of them out there, they need to be put out front. They need to be showcased. Like, in fact, I got to reach back out to him. The your pastor that we had on down there in Florida.
Yeah.
That started the school, him and the I think it was a group of about 100 others that started the schools in their churches because the Black history was pulled out of education down there in Florida. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, and as a matter of fact, I just got an email from him. And anyone, any of us, to the Time for Awakening audience, anybody can participate because in that education, that Black History program they have there that they're initiating, because it's done virtually.
Oh, wait a minute, he reached out to you?
Well, yeah, because I got on the mailing list.
Okay, all right. See, that's, listen, he even said it on the program that they need help from other areas. Because right. He said some of the college professors and all kind of backed up because they didn't want to be seen as going against their school or even the government of Florida, right. The legislature right. in Florida. So they didn't help that. They wouldn't get no help. So they basically was reaching out to people to get involved. See, those are the pastors that need to be congratulated for what they're doing. That's showing real leadership. That's showing being a shepherd of a flock, looking out for the people.
And that's like, you know, that part of, you know, the connections, again, to that point that you made in the sense of how we, you know, have to interconnect with each other regardless of our different geographical locations. But our particular worldview is the same, and our political to a degree, our political understanding is the same. It's just a matter of making those connections. I was just going over looking at, you know, we talk all the time about the convention in 72 in Gary. I was just reading over what happened in 1980, when the National Black Independent Political Party formation was occurring, and the different points of view. Now, and this is from 72 to 1980, coming up on the presidential election. But the thing that struck me, and it goes to, I want to put it in the context of reparations or our repair, the political view of because at that point it was the continuation of a party formation. And until I read this article, I didn't even realize, it didn't connect, of even when the convention came to Philadelphia, in November of 1980, a lot of us was there. But when we asked, well, where's that formation, you know, now? But what, to the point I'm trying to get to, and going over this, there were different views about how this independent political formation should occur. And it centered around, because of that time period, around the presidential election, Carter, Reagan, and Anderson. And we had different political views, which I would like to share at some point, just to give context to why it's so important, even though we're in 2024 and we're talking about international politics in relationship to the Palestinian and Israel, which was an issue in 1972. Here we're in 2024, and we see the same kind of division and what has occurred since that time. How many more Black elected officials do we have? How many more church sizes have political influence in our community? And what is the condition of the political condition of our communities or our position when we're looking at how the party is serving or not serving, or how the national president campaign is serving or not serving the Black community?
Yeah, well, Richard, we got an agenda and we got work to do as a people, and it includes dealing with this quote unquote leadership. They have to be dealt with. They have to be confronted with these issues.
Right.
You know, I heard, and I guess one of our regular callers will probably call up later on. But I'm listening, and usually I don't listen, to be honest. Even though we was on that station, me and Brother Reggie, for 5 years. You know, some of the hosts on there leaves a lot to be desired, as far as I'm concerned. And I'm not trying to be critical of anybody, because I'm not perfect. But I do, or do try, we do try to bring issues on this program that reflects our community and things that have been coming against our community, so our people can critically look at what's happening. Now, one of our callers, usually I don't do this, but I'm going to do it because it's on my mind. One of the callers that calls this program frequently called up the morning host on a Black Talk station here in Philadelphia that happens to be a pastor and asked him whether he's aware of the petition that black pastors signed about this war in Israel against Hamas, and whether he was aware of it and whether he signed it. And guess what his answer was, Richard?
He wasn't aware of it.
Well, no. He didn't say that. He said his first response was, "You're not going to back me into a corner." And then he said, "I'm not aware of what you're talking about.
You're not going to back me up to a corner, right? Well, I don't want to get in that mess."
But wait a minute. If you're not aware of it, why is your first response, "You're not going to back me into a corner"?
Yeah,
and
right,
then you're supposed to be a pastor advising people about worshiping the Lord, and you're going to tell a big lie about you unaware of it. And the man always says on his programs that he's a 30-year journalist, he's this, that, and the other. You know, come on, man. Don't lie. Don't lie. His first response was to the caller was, "You ain't going to back me into a corner. I'm not aware of it. Thank you for your call." And then went on to something else.
And that's the...
Listen, I was at a radio station. I know what the program director told me before we even got started, me and Brother Reggie, about what we need to do to have a good program.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about the radio station, you have a lot of resources. You have a producer that helps you get a lot of stuff. You have resources.
Mm-hmm.
So for somebody to say that they're not aware of a particular thing, and don't come back. Now, everybody's not aware of everything. I understand that. But if somebody that is not a journalist pulls your coat on something, and you that is a judge, Richard, I'll give an example. You're supposed to be a licensed plumber. You know about plumbing work. And then you come to my house to fix something, and I got to advise you on what you're supposed to be doing. There's something wrong with that picture.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard that. I nearly fell out of my chair when I was listening to that dialogue.
But you know, Elliot, that's how, and I hate to say it this way, in general, because you say it a different way, that as a black community, we don't know. You know what I mean? Like, that's why it's important to kind of share this information. It's important for black news outlets, whether it be print or radio or even, you know, these new platforms that they have, social media, to inform and really get back to the period of advocacy for black people. But when people, you know, when these people who are in these positions and they say that, I mean, that schizophrenia or Du Bois double consciousness, "You're not going to back me in the corner," is like, I'm aware of what you're talking about.
Yes.
And I'm going to let you know that even if it's, that response, like being so knee jerk, like that wasn't supposed to come out. That was supposed to stay in his head. What was supposed to come out was first, "Oh, I'm not aware."
Exactly.
You can't question that, whether he is or not. Right. But what came out is the, you know, of that, both consciousness are so upfront and the fear is so intense that the first reaction is, "You're not going to back me in the corner," meaning I know the consequences of me responding to that.
Wow.
The perceived consequences And I'm not going to do that. You know, so that's, but what does that do? It says that information that get that to that market of people who are listening, if they don't know what that caller was talking about, they have no more idea about it.
I know it, unless they look on their own.
Right. You know, because and that means that people in position who are supposed to either be informing or you know, giving an analysis, they are not educating or reinforcing the body of facts that's out there, the points of views that's out there, because he shouldn't be afraid of his point of view. He or she, they shouldn't be afraid. Like, if you support Israel, you should be down with that. You shouldn't be hiding that. Right?
Yeah, well.
But what you don't want Jeffries is ain't. Black community where you may have to justify and you really don't have no justification. That's where the challenge comes.
Well, we're going to take a brief break. When we come back, we'll continue the discussion. And it looks like that Professor James Lancelot won't be joining, but we'll get him on probably next week or the week after, because we got some upcoming guests. We're going to get him on because this this discussion and the information and the update needs to be given to our people. So we'll work on that. But we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the discussion. You can get involved too at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832, Time for an Awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Escape the digital plantation. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. Abibitumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. Abibitumi.store is here for you. ABIBITUMI. Black Power. ABIBITUMI. The only word you need to know to join your global Kometsu Black family, to join your interconnected Kometsu Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. Abibitumi.com. Abibitumi.tv. Abibitumitv.com, Abibitumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
We are the watchmen on the wall. You are too. You watch with a political eye. We watch from a spiritual eye. But we're supposed to be the watchmen for the people that vote for us. The sad thing is the people vote, but they don't give you the money to run your campaigns. So here come big business.
How are you? How are you, Judge? How are you, Alderman? How are you, Congressman? How are you? How are you, Reverend? Well, what can I do for you today, Reverend?
You can't do nothing for me. See, that's what we got to be careful of. We got to be careful of who we bow down to. But see, when you get in your congregation and you talk this Jesus, this powerful Jesus that's sitting at the right hand of the Father with all power in his hand, then you go with your hat in your hand to the governor, to the mayor, to the president, begging for some crumbs. You have sold your God cheap. And you make the white man downtown disrespect all of us.
In short, the lords of capital are creatures of U.S. imperial dominance. They go out of business when the empire does. The rulers are looking class death in the face, and it terrifies them. And when the lords of capital become frightened, they order their servants in politics and the war industries and the vast national security networks to take care of the problem by any means necessary. That means militarily encircling Russia and China, arming and mobilizing tens of thousands of jihadist terrorists in Syria in an attempt to repeat the regime change in Libya, waging a war of economic sanctions and low-level armed aggression against Iran, occupying most of the African continent through subversion of African militaries, escalating subversion in Latin America, and spying on everyone on Earth with a digital connection. All this to stop the clock that is ticking on U.S. and European world economic dominance.
The Organization of Afro-American Unity shall include all people of African descent in the Western Hemisphere. In essence, what is the thing? Instead of you and me running around here seeking allies in our struggle for freedom in the Irish neighborhood or the Jewish neighborhood or the Italian neighborhood, we need to seek some allies among people who look something like we do. And once we get their allies, it's time out for you and me to stop running away from the wolf right into the arms of the fox, looking for some kind of help. Number two, self-defense. We assert the Afro-Americans' right to self-defense. The Constitution of the United States of America clearly affirms the right of every American citizen to bear arms. And as Americans, we will not give up a single right guaranteed under the Constitution. The history of unpunished violence against our people clearly indicates that we must be prepared to defend ourselves, or we will continue to be a defenseless people at the mercy of a ruthless and violent racist mob.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:14 here on this Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. Brother Richard, I just got a text from Dr. Taylor. He apologized. He said, I screwed up. Is it too late? Listen, I think it is because I think it'd be good to spend some time on this issue, Richard.
I'm going to
reschedule him for next week. I got to look at the calendar and see what we're doing, but I'm gonna push it back.
Okay, no problem. And can I share this? I mean, because I'm excited about, you know, as I said, we talk about 72, the convention in 72, and then to hear what was going on in 80. And I want to place it just in the language of the context of reparations or repair when we're talking about our political association. And it's these threads that was happening at that point. This is 8 years after the convention in 72. So the organizing, the political organizing for the national black independent political party is still going on. And I want to just share these three tendencies. People may know some of these individuals, historical individuals. But what we're talking about now in the last section, these are tendencies that is with us now. And here we see them. We see them at different generations. So if it's possible, can I just go ahead and share these couple paragraphs of what went on? Because these are delegates.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. And in this case, they were meeting in New Orleans. They met in New Orleans. They met in Philadelphia. They met in Chicago between 80 through 82. And so, this is Manny Marable's recount of that. And he says three distinct tendencies or opinions emerge on the party question. The first position was essentially the dominant tendency maintained through the National Black Political Assembly history, first articulated by leadership at Gary, Amari Baraka, Representative Charles Diggs, and Mayor Richard Hatchard. In principle, it accepted the historical necessity of building an independent electoral political force outside both major capitalist parties. But the construction of this party was to be protracted over a gradual period of time. Progressive black candidates running as Democrats, as well as white electoral aspirants, had to be supported organizationally. For further, A.J. McKnight, chair of the Louisiana National Black Political Assembly, this meant endorsing the reelection of Jimmy Carter for president. And what struck me there, because we hear in this moment the point of, the need even, to support Biden, right? But this is Jimmy Carter at this point and supposedly using the Democratic Party. The second view was advanced by Dr. Ron Walters, prominent Howard University political scientist and the National Black Political Assembly secretary. Walters had attended both the Republican and Democratic conventions this year. That's 1980, and had come away more convinced than ever that the opportunity existed for announcing the formation of a black political party in 1980. The standard political alternative of the lesser evils represented no real alternative at all. Black people had to have an organizational vehicle to articulate their own concerns independent of white bourgeoisie politics. Now, and do you hear some of the language in 2024? We're saying some of these same languages. Things.
Exactly.
And so the third tendency was represented by the opinions of Ronald Daniels, Dean Lovelace, chair of the Ohio Black Assembly. This is what fascinates me at this period, because, and it goes to what you said in the last section. When we talk about Boston, we talk about New York, we talk about Chicago, we talk about, Mississippi, we talk about Tennessee. I mean, they're sending delegates to hash out a party formation. Representatives of people from different areas talking about pulling something together. And I thought about it. I said, well, I don't, I see these different formations, but, the point of coming together for this. So this third tendency was represented by, as I said, Ron Daniels, Dean Lovelace, chair of the Ohio Black Assembly, and myself. And the person who is wrote this article, this part was Mac Warren. And he said, we argue that the foundation of announcing the creation of a new political party had been achieved. So for him, they were already engaged. For them, on the other hand, we were not convinced up to the eve of the New Orleans Convention that some critical details in forging a transitional strategy for restructuring the National Black Political Assembly into a black political party was clearly defined. The social structure of every people mature along uneven lines of development. Certain states were ready to build an independent party, but others were not. So I just wanted to, you know, I thought that to use this historical context, because we could say when using, you know, just this Israeli, you know, Palestinian, that's and the black elected official, and here locally, this one commentator, we can use that. That's one political view that has historical antecedents, right? And that's and then we have these others. And I just thought that that was important to bring up. One, that they were, this is 1980. This ain't no far distant past. It may seem like that, but it's not no far distant past. And we were talking about and going through the process of the necessity of having an independent political party or association that is national to represent our agenda. I think that that's, we have to keep in mind, regardless of what our thoughts and our opinions are, that this is what we're dealing with. And for me, you know, nobody else can heal that. There's nothing else that can be done to heal that, as one of the clips that you played by Dr. King. Nobody can heal that but us. Nobody can come up with a resolution to where these different points of view do not work and harm each other more than help and heal for the black community, but us. And we can't just overlook that. And it's right in our face that other generations, and we can keep going back. We can go back to the latter part of right after Reconstruction, the same thing happening when black people had friction who were a part of the Republican Party and seeing they were betrayed and was going to move to the Democratic Party. And that didn't happen finally until the 60s, but started really during Roosevelt in the 30s. So we got to stop this political, tennis, where we just bouncing back and forth and get stationed in America on our own. I just thought that was important to bring up.
Yeah, well, it plays, and it's all in the conversation that we're having this evening, Richard. We're in open forum. Question or comment or anything you want, you can jump in by dialing 215-490-9832. We got some callers on the line. Before I go to them, Richard, let me, because I just want to share this article here. It's two articles, because the propaganda is starting. Black elected officials are going around talking about all of the things. I can't forget that around that Thanksgiving holiday when the press secretary, the sister from Jamaica, I think, came on black radio and talked about how much Biden did to reduce the price of turkey and cranberry sauce so you can have it on your table. I mean, the silly type of, I mean, who do you think you're talking to? What kind of audience? I mean, that didn't even deserve a response as far as I'm concerned. But now you got the people going around talking about the lead pipes in black communities, money dedicated to this infrastructure, black people with jobs, black businesses created. You know, when you're talking about pipes and clean water, that's supposed to be something that's supposed to come with your citizenship here. Mm-hmm. Everybody's supposed to have access to clean water and not drink lead poison water and lead in your pipes. Is that supposed to be a special favor to black people? Access to capital to start a business is supposed to be fair across the board. So why are you coming to me acting like you're doing me a favor by saying, and notice I'm saying by saying, that you're giving me that we've created all of these black businesses. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, a couple of dollars is going towards HBCUs. But when you have these state universities, you're supposed to get money from the state and the federal government.
Right.
We've read several articles on here that says that black universities and colleges never got the proper money they were supposed to be getting. So now all of a sudden, if a couple of dollars is going to, like when we read about that money going towards Howard for right. To develop weaponry or something, for, right. to, basically right. To further
the department.
Right. Exactly. I mean, come on. I mean, what are you talking about? What are we really talking about here? But let me read the chair with this article before we go to the callers here. This was from the Pew, February 16th of 2024, a couple of days ago. It says, a look at black businesses in the U.S. That's the header. It says more than one in five black adults in the United States say owning a business is essential to financial success, according to the September 2023 Pew Research Survey. But they still make up a small share of the overall firms and revenue, according to our analysis and federal data. The Pew Research conducted this analysis to examine the characteristics of black-owned businesses in the United States. The analysis relies primarily on data from the annual business survey, conducted by the U.S. Census and National Science Foundation's National Center for Science and Engineering Statistics. And this is something that when we read that Brookings chart, because Brookings charts it by cities of the businesses owned by blacks in these particular cities. You remember when we shared right. some of those things? But it says nationally, the average nationally, it says here about 3% of U.S. businesses are black or African-American owned.
Mm-hmm.
And that puts us in fourth position. Well, they rounded off saying 3%. The statistics say 2.8%, which puts you in fourth position. But according to this thing, whites own 85.1% of the businesses in the United States. The second position falls to Asians with 11.3%. The third position falls to Hispanics with 7.1%, and bringing up the rear is African Americans with 2.8%. So we can either believe the propaganda that these parties, I don't care whether it's Democrat or Republican, this lesser of two evils, I don't want evil, period. Keep talking about they're developing, but I don't know what the businesses they're developing or where they are. Maybe they're on Mars. But they're sure not developing in black communities. Bringing up the rear at 2.8%. And keep in mind, the listening audience, that it says that whites own 85.1% of the small businesses in this country. The Hispanics with 7.1% and the Asians with 11.3%, they benefit from two areas. In fact, all of them benefit from two areas. Whites benefit from all four of the areas, but the other two benefit from two areas because Hispanics and Asians basically control the economy in their communities. They control it with the businesses. They control the economy. But this white supremacist society allows them also to get a piece of you. They control the economy in your communities. Because you don't see these Asian places and these Hispanic poppy stores in white communities. You don't see them. And if black people disagree with what I'm saying, do a tour in your areas. I don't know whether you have that many Latino. Some areas is different. They might have Indians running stores in black neighborhoods or Arabs running stores. But the ones that have Latinos in their community, go around to white areas and see if you see these poppy stores and these Asian restaurants selling beer and loose cigarettes and everything else besides that food. See if you see them in white communities. You don't. So they not only control the economy in their communities, they control the economy in your communities. And you're supposed to have black elected officials that's supposed to be putting a stop to this.
You know, Elliot, it raises the question when you frame it up, when you frame it like that. It made me think. In poor white communities, are there Hispanic stores and Asian stores of various types, you know, in poor white communities?
Well, I mean, listen, if you look at Philadelphia, where's the poor white communities? Mm-hmm. You might have had them up there in the area of Fishtown and in Kensington, which is still, the Fishtown is changing. Because they bring in another white dynamic in Fishtown.
Right.
But the Kensington, I'm just talking about Philadelphia. Everybody can look at their areas. But this Kensington area where you got all them dope addicts and all, they don't control. You still got white businesses up there.
Right.
And you do have an Hispanic population, but they're catering to their own people that's in those areas. So I'm talking about white communities. These other people, and the black businesses in these white communities, you don't see that at all. But I'm talking about a lot of these other nationalities. You don't see these stores that proliferate black communities in the white communities. They're not allowed.
Mm-hmm.
The council people and their business associations will not allow that. It's not allowed. And that's what you're supposed to have in your communities. Because these people, when they get these, which has to be go through zoning and all that type of stuff, that's where an elected official is involved. They don't have to allow these stop and goes and all of these stores selling all this stuff that, you know, that's a scourge on the community. They don't have to allow that. Now, let me read an article to couple with that, Richard, before I go to these calls that's been waiting. This is an article out of Forbes magazine, basically right after things started opening back up with just COVID. It says small business owners have a tough time navigating through COVID-19 pandemic across the United States. Black-owned business owners in particular have been hit especially hard by the pandemic and the subsequent shutdowns. Many of them were operating with slim margins to begin with and did not have a safety net before the pandemic began. Many places hit hardest by the pandemic are reeling concurrently from health crisis, business closures, and job losses. So they were already reeling.
Mm-hmm.
Often these have been urban areas, and the effects of the pandemic on small businesses amid forced closings, modified reopenings, and weakened demands are disproportionately affecting communities of color, according to the new report by Cramer Mills and the New York Federal Reserve. The study found that a number of active businesses fell by 22% from February to April 2021, the largest drop on record. The differences among closures, the difference among closure rates across racial and ethnic groups was even more striking. According to researchers, black-owned businesses experienced a decline of 41%.
Mm.
Latino businesses fell by 32%. Asian businesses dropped by 26%. And in contrast, the number of white business owners fell by 17%. Using data on COVID-19 cases and census information, Paycheck Protection Programs, the PPP, according to and data on small firms, health, financial health, from small business credit surveys, the report found that black-owned firms were more likely to be located in COVID-19 hotspots, whereas white-owned firms are less likely to be in most heavily affected areas. Loans provided through the government Paycheck Protection Program for small business administered by the Treasury Department and the SBA reached only 20% of eligible firms in black-owned areas. Because black-owned firms had shaky cash dispositions, weaker banking relationships, and pre-existing funding gaps, they had little cushion entering the crisis. The PPP distribution the PPP distributed $5.2 billion in money to 5 million firms with an average loan size of $107,000. The SBA estimated that the program saved 50 million jobs overall. However, in the 30 counties considered particularly vulnerable to black business closures, most counties saw only 15% of their total businesses receive PPP loans. The PPP program halted in August 8th with more than $130 billion remaining in the fund, the kitty fund. The question became, why didn't black firms not try to access those loans? Is it possible that they were reluctant to apply for a PPP loan given uncertainty about the future and that they were nervous about being able to repay the loan if it was not forgiven? So, you know, that only goes to some of the things that we had put out before in this program about black people not getting those loans or forgiveness for those loans or getting any of that money. I'm talking about businesses,
right?
Which I can personally attest to. Somebody that had been in business over 20 years didn't get a government PPP money and applied three times. So this is not something I'm just saying, and I don't know what I'm talking about. According to their own statistics, only 15% of black businesses got any of that money. So anybody that does, they need to consider themselves fortunate. 3% of the loan, 2.8% of the loan of the businesses in this country is black owned. Pulling up the rear, the real rear. 85% of them is white. 11.7%, according to it, is Asian. And 7% is Hispanic. All of them controlling the economy of your community. And some of that can be changed with conscious black leadership, especially in the areas that is overpopulated with black people. Some of these areas that's overpopulated with black people, these cities like Baltimore, Jackson, Mississippi, Detroit, others, is somebody controlling the economy in those communities that are not black. Let me go to a couple of these calls, which has been waiting. And we lost one, so they can give us a call back. Let's go here. Let's go to Phoenix, Arizona. Phoenix. Yes, sir. Call up.
Yes, good brothers. Greetings.
Hey, sir. How you doing?
Brother Marcus. All right, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot. Brother Elliot, you on fire tonight. He's speaking the truth, you know. That's where the revolution has to go. Wherever we make up the mass majority of the population, we must control the body politics and the economics of that community. That is a simple agenda that every politician can put that on the black agenda. Simple, that is one, you know, because that is how every other ethnic group operate. You see, racial economic cooperation. That's it. Keeping the money in the family, circulating that dollar. That's what they perfected in Black Wall Street. And that's why they said, we have to destroy this. You see? So it's not say for lack of effort to know, you know. We have to take that into consideration too. It's not for a lack of trying, because our people have tried consistently in this country. And it has been consistently been destroyed.
Yeah.
See, because they're not going to allow you to build a black empire here in this economy. That is too much of a shining example. Not the slave, not the ex-slave, the ex-enslaved. No. They don't want that. And they have consistently demonstrated that over the history, 500 years. it hasn't changed. What is happening now? They're doubling down now again. See? They talk about what that Project 2025, whatever. It's another double down. They talk about disease X. Some other plague that's supposed to be coming. They say that's 20 times worse than COVID. It's supposed to be hitting next year. You know, so, you know, who knows, you know, but there's always a seat, you know, between the cup and the lip. Anyway, good brothers, you keep on keeping on. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your all contribution, right. Sir.
Take care now.
Let's go to D.C. D.C. Washington, D.C. Caller, you're there. Let's put that back on hold. Maybe they stepped away. Let's go to caller. You're there. Albuquerque. Let's put Albuquerque back on hold. Let's go up to Philadelphia.
Yeah, Brother Elliot.
Yes, sir.
How you doing, Brother Elliot? How you doing, Brother Richard?
Good.
Praise be to Allah. You know, good show tonight, as Brother Marcus said, stated before me. You know, Brother Elliot, I had to laugh when you talked about me and my encounter with the individual on the terrestrial radio station.
Yeah, I'm glad that you kind of, because I didn't want to necessarily disclose the conversation, but, you know, go ahead.
All right, no problem saying that to you and Richard and the time for we can listen to the audience. When I talked to this individual, you know, I had to chuckle because it wasn't a trick question. Like Brother Richard made a good comment earlier. Richard said, if you stand with Israel, be a man or a woman about it. Don't be talk out about it. It's despicable you as a black man or woman support a murderous regime like that. But please stand up and say you do if that's what you feel like. And let me say this for the record, Elliot and Richard and the top waking listener audience. I text that individual late on that night, late on that evening, and I said, I wouldn't try to put you on the spot. I said, it wasn't a trick question. It wasn't meant to embarrass you. It was either yes or no. And I stated by saying, I don't know whether you had or not. I said, but I would hope if you did see the petition that you did sign it, because that would be the moral thing to do, especially you as a man of God. You know, whether you're a Christian minister, Hebrew minister, or Islamic clergy, or you even from one of the African religions and stuff, or your Buddhism, any kind of, you know, faith in a higher force. So I hope anybody of moral standing would sign that. Now, I didn't get no response from this person, but I did text him and let him know. What no thing about putting you on the spot. It's not a trick question, either yes or no. It's that simple. But, you know, I'm kind of tie things up about this, Brother Marcus said about the fear of black people economically independent, and how Marcus hit some key points a minute ago. See, when you, like you said, there's lesser two evils and stuff. Like you said, we got to stop this nonsense with these, you know, the Trump boogeyman, Republican boogeyman, because at the end of the day, as Brother Marcus told us 40, 50 years ago, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, all those that talked about the Democrat and Republican Party being the same. You know, and if anybody have any doubt what these people think of us, I don't know if I shared this story with the time for looking at this audience, about 25 years or so, I think it might have been by now, you had Billy Mann Sr., who's deceased now, who was the head of the Republican Party in Philadelphia. You had Bob Brady, who's the current head of the Democrat. Both of them are white, and both of them are Irishmen. You know, every year the Republicans have this clam bake up in the Northeast. The only year they didn't have it, I think, was in 2020 because of the pandemic. But they had this big clam bake up there where they serve roast beef, clams on the shell, Arctic bear liquor, and all the stuff you want to eat. You know, it's when it's this little gathering they have every year. Well, anyway, at this gathering 25 years ago, a white reporter, and that's why this go back to what you always say, Brother Elliot, where's our black investigative reporters to come up with these things? It's like you very hear about, I'm out listening to the news tonight, and they mentioned a white girl. I forgot what story she was covering, but the first thing that title they called her, Elliot, was investigative reporter. And I'm saying to myself, wow, where's our black male and female investigative reporters? It's like it's non-existence in most cases. Well, anyway, this white reporter that wrote for one of the major papers, he attended this clam bake. He was coming for the paper that he worked for. So he talked to Billy Mann, and stuff, you know. And Billy Mann, he asked, he said, well, Mr. Mann, why? He said, what are you doing to include or build up your black members of the Republican Party? So, and because it was only like a couple there at that clown thing, this was like 25 years ago. So anyway, Billy Mann was alleged to told this reporter, look, we're doing our best to build up our black membership. He said, because, you know, we want to have more blacks. And I was like, you know, like my buddy, Bob Brady, who has the Democrat Party. So me and went on to say, you know, when the reporter pressed him, he said, well, you're not doing a good job of it. He said, you got to get me. You got to realize, you know, I'm doing my best. This is the exact words, Elliot and Richard. He said, I'm doing my best to build up our niggas in the Republican Party. He said, so my good friend Bob, we talk all the time, my good friend Bob Brady, who runs the Democrat Party, said the same thing too. We got to make sure that we get our niggas up, the percentage of our niggas up in the Democrat Party. Bob says that to me. So I'm working with my friend Bob so we can get our niggas, our percentage of niggas up in the Democrat Party, as well as the percentage of niggas up in the Republican Party. So this was my point, Ellis. This is what these people think of us, man. When they be high, so, and Bob Ray alleged to be a friend of black people, you know what I mean? So, you know, that's what most of these blacks tell you, he's a friend of ours, you know. But my point, man, is that this is what these people say about us, whether they're Democrat or Republican, behind closed doors. That's what Trump said about that dumbass Tim Scott when he get a chance to talk behind his back. He called him all kinds of names. And the same thing on the Democrat side with Biden. He called them silly niggas like Clyburn. I can imagine the names he called Clyburn and them. It's like I imagine the names that Trump calls Tim Scott. So, I mean, you know, come on, man. These people are just a joke. But anyway, on the economics thing, Brother Marcus made me think. He said this country historically, whether it's Black Wall Street, whether it's what's that Rosewood down in Florida, and even with Abdullah Muhammad, didn't know the white man was when the messenger had farmland and cows and cattle. This white man was so evil, he poisoned and killed a lot of cows that the Abdullah had on the farmland to help, you know, feed our people beef and things like that. So my point is that when we get economically strong, to Brother Marcus' point, Ellen Richard, we definitely have to have some protection. And Mr. Farrakhan have said this because he has went back and tried to reacquire a lot of that land that we had under the honor of Elijah Muhammad. He said that we have to have protection because this man is deep. It's like Brother Marcus, he don't want us to have no kind of economic boom and stuff. And it's so, and Ellie, I'm always go to my grave and stuff. When you look at two brothers whose life was took tragically and some very mysterious circumstances, Reginald Lewis, who was one of the first black billionaires in this country, he was the author of the book, Why Should White Boys Have a Lot of Fun? Economic genius. You got Brother Ken Bridges from my time. Now we supposed to, like Dick Gregory said, we supposed to believe, this white man is so slick. Now we supposed to believe that he was out there pumping gas on the Virginia state lines, pumping gas, and all of a sudden these two crazy Negroes, John Muhammad and Lee Marvel, just picked him at random to kill him and stuff, right? I mean, come on, man. I mean, this stuff just don't happen this way with our people, man. These white people are so, they do things, Elliot, and some of our people just take it as the truth, and we don't even challenge. And like I said, Elliot, this is where your investigative reporters coming at to dive into this. The same with Sam Cooke's death. So I've said in all these years, I'm not close to these last couple of things, I'm on, you know, other callers, but like with Sam Cooke's death, Sam Cooke was doing things, Elliot, he was revolutionary for that time and stuff. And I didn't know all this time that Sam Cooke was managed by a white Jew named Alan Klein. And according to, when they did the documentary that was came on my phone, the white boy even said Alan Klein is rumored to have murdered Sam Cooke. They had Sam Cooke murdered. He did this lie, but he was shot by some crazy woman. He said it was a lie, man. He never was shot. He was beat to death by mob thugs and stuff like that. You know what I mean? And the fact that Sam Cooke at that time, you talking about the 60s, Elliot, when he, for a black man during that time, this time he wanted to control his music, he wanted to control his royalties, he wanted to have other black artists like Bobby Womack and Aretha Franklin under his watch to cut out the white man as the middleman. That man, That was bold back then, you know what I mean, for a black man even to think that. But Sam Cooke was attempting to do that. And then you fast forward a couple years later, always read in the same way. We supposed to believe that this man, 6-foot-something man, he drowns in about 3 inches of water that a child could walk through. You know what I mean? I mean, some of these things are just using common sense to show you how they kill our people, especially when our people become like Brother Marcus, is a threat to the economic
empire, and with black people be self-sufficient, where you ain't got to depend on this white man for nothing like we had doing Black Wall Street, our own schools, our farms, our banks, our everything. They find ways to limit our people, but that's why, like, and it go back, and I close with this, Elliot, this go back to what you said about the reparations, Elliot. We fight for this as hard as we can. We try to get our black people in place, like you see, work with Brother Siddiqui and the Nubian Circle. But like you said, we have to have a backup plan. And I like what you said. That's the key. We got to have a backup plan because you don't know how these, because like you said, you knowing how these people think, like you said, they've been lying and conniving all these years. We can't just think they're going to have an epiphany and do the right thing. So it's always good to have a backup plan, whatever that plan may be. And I don't claim to have all the answers, but whatever that plan may be, we got to come together as a collective to make sure that that plan is there in case. You know what I mean, Elliot?
Yeah, I agree.
You know, it's that simple, man. But anyway, Elliot, lastly, like I said, I'm just in closing, Elliot. To show you where the devil Biden is, and again, this is to put our people what you're dealing with. He gonna sit there and talk out of both sides of his rotten face and his rotten mouth, saying that he warned Netanyahu about the mass casualties and stuff that gonna occur in Rafah if they go and invade. But when the reporter pressed him and said, "Well, what kind of punishment? Well, we're not gonna punish them." And they shut your damn mouth. If you're not gonna punish them, then don't say anything, man. You know, so you pretty much still giving Netanyahu the green light. And this is why Sister Rashidi Tlaib, I promise this will be my last point. Our sister from Michigan says she ain't going to Palestinians. She said, I'm encouraging that people don't vote for this creep in the primary. And hopefully not only the primary, but even in the general election in November. Again, I don't know how any black person, man or woman, gay, lesbian, straight, Jew, Christian, Muslim, whatever, can vote for a guy like him. This guy has no moral compass, man. And you can see how bad Trump is. This guy got no more. He's watching innocent children being slaughtered every day, and he's sitting there still drinking with Netanyahu, giving the green light and stuff, man. And this is a quote from Biden. Now, if anybody want to know his history, he said this about Israel. This is a quote from anybody doubt what Brother Joe saying. Look it up for yourself. He says, if Israel didn't exist, we would have created it. This is what Joe Biden said. In other words, he said he never met a Zionist he didn't like. So that's all you need to know about this creep. Okay, Elliot?
Thanks for your contribution.
You're welcome. Peace.
All right. Let's go to New York City. New York.
Yeah, what's going on, Richard and Elliot? You know, it really amazes me how people call Trump the devil, Biden the devil. But the thing that they don't really realize is that this is an empire, and that both of those devil jobs is to promote and push the empire forward. One is in the position to sustain the empire, which will allow this Negro in America to have a little something. And the other one is in the position to destroy the empire where the Negro will have nothing. So, in all honesty, you really need to pick and choose who's the better devil for your existence on the planet. Because if you think one devil is going to do more for you than the other one, you're kindly sadly mistaken. Because, you know, I like to ask this question and ask this question very honest and fairly. What makes the Negro think that the white man going to give them reparation? What position are you in to demand reparation? And if your demand is not met, what the hell are you going to do? What position are you in to punish the white man in any way in this country? You don't own nothing. You don't control nothing. You don't manufacture nothing. You're basically a footstool for the white man.
Yeah, but you just said that we're in a position. You just said that we're in a position. We're only in a position where we can choose the lesser of two evils. That's what you said, right?
I said we in the position which is to not have any power or control or to do anything to the white man in this country.
No, you said that we're in a position, we complain about one person being the devil and the other person being the devil, but we're in a position where we have to choose the lesser of two evils. That's what you said.
Basically. Yeah.
Okay,
well,
that's what I asked you. That's what you said.
What position are we in to do anything? To change the course of the direction of the country that we supposedly basically built.
Well, no, I don't advocate changing the course of the direction of this country. I advocate changing our direction. To me, this country is headed. Listen, you asked me a question, let me answer. You asked me a question, I'm going to answer.
Okay,
this
all right.
The way this country was established is doomed for failure. It's doomed. It's doomed because it was established on every evil principle that you can imagine. So what we should be doing is establishing or charting a new direction for our people and our children as best as we can. I'm not talking about establishing anything for this country. Maybe you are.
Elliot, let me tell you something, man. I have been involved in the movement for over 30 years.
I'm telling you straight out.
Black people going backwards. We in the last 30 years haven't built anything towards sovereignty. We haven't built anything to move us forward to compete against this white boy. And now it's at the point where we're not only having to compete with the white boy, we got to compete with every other nationality. If white folks said that we no longer had use for black people, explain to me or tell me, what would black people do? How would we survive? We have no communities. We barely have neighborhoods. We can't employ ourselves. We don't have no banks to give us loans and to do the necessary things that we need to do. And you know something? We have it all in place if we work together to do the necessary thing. As much money.
Wait a minute. Say that again. We have what? We have what in place?
We have the things in place to place ourselves in a much better position.
Oh, you just said that we don't have it.
Based on simple,
you just said that we don't have it. You're double talking. You just said we don't have these things in place.
No, because you didn't let me finish the point. I'll give you a perfect example. We have black churches in these cities that place all of their money into white institutions. If black churches came together and placed their money into black institutions, into black banks, and we did the necessary things to build institutions, we could do it. But that ain't the reality.
Okay.
That ain't what we into.
No.
We don't work together on
that's
that
what
level
some people are not into.
Nothing.
That's what some people are not into. See, because I done had this type of conversation with you before, and I'm not going to do it. But I'm going to say this to you. The mutual, and we talk about history all the time on this program. Evidently, you don't be listening, or maybe you don't know history or don't care to know it.
But I know enough history to know that you can't name me one black institution that's in a position to help black people.
Mutual aid societies had been set up to help black people when we were still enslaved, and they generated money.
And who controlled that?
What do you mean, who controlled it?
Who institutionalized it?
What do you mean, who institutionalized
it?
We set it up. That's why I'm saying, do me a favor then. Do me a favor.
No,
go look. Wait, no. This is what I want you to do. Because you asking that question, you have no clue to what I'm talking about. Go in this week and look up the history of mutual aid societies in black communities and see who controlled them. See who set it up. See who institutionalized it, and then come back. Do that homework. Do that homework before we continue this conversation, because you don't know what you're talking about. You have no clue to what you're talking about. You don't know what you're talking about.
Are you doing anything today? That's the only question.
Do that homework. Do that homework and come back. Just pretend you're in third grade and the teacher give you an assignment. And I'm not saying I'm your teacher. Do the homework and then come back.
That's a waste of assignment if they ain't doing nothing today.
Okay.
That's a waste of assignment.
Great. Okay. All right. Hey, listen.
If they ain't doing anything today, thanks for your contribution. I'm wasting my promise.
Brother, thanks for your contribution.
Yeah, thank you too, brother.
All right. Peace.
Richard. I just spoke of a party formation that occurred in the 80s that, you know, and as far as today, there are the outgrowth of mutual aid societies are cooperatives, which are, and I think a brother that calls in and had been a guest a couple of times.
You're talking about Eric?
Yes.
Yeah, they have the largest black mutual aid society down in existence over 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
So it's a question of what you make yourself aware of. And now you can start raise another question out of to what degree, you know, we will want them to be expansive. When you talk about 3% or 2% of business, because when business is tied to employment, right? Because black businesses hire black employees. If there's no black businesses, there's no black employees. So, that's the thing. And then, black businesses is tied to, as you said, using the COVID, it's tied to banks. And if banks don't wish to provide the capital for businesses to be able to even get started or scale, then that you can't have the employees that would be even be able to buy the goods. So it's
listen, Richard, that's what Jared Ball was talking about when he was here with us a couple weeks ago, that these things are tied. But if you have a racist government and a racist society, it's doubly hard for you to do this. But it can be done. And see that, and that's why our people got to make a decision on what we going to do. Now, I'm not saying that. Listen, some people want to fight to the last man in regards to making this country do what they're supposed to do.
Right.
And, okay, to do that. But some people are saying we got to arm ourselves. And when I say arm ourselves, I'm talking about the knowledge in your mind to move our people forward, irregardless of this system. We have to. So those things, they can mutually work together, because those ideas are not polar opposites. But if somebody wants to dedicate all their resources, finances, and energy into making these people do the right thing, then, you know, have at it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to work. We got to concentrate our efforts on what we're doing as a people. Richard, let's give a few minutes here to England. Brother, are you there?
Good evening, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Good evening.
How are you, sir?
Yes, I'm very well. Thank you very much. Very well. I'm just aspiring to do a little bit better. But Brother Elliot, do you remember you had a guest on? I don't know if you're aware of her name was Shakinda Chinedu.
You know, I shared that with Richard. Richard, you saw that when I shared it with you the other day?
I seen that. But I wasn't familiar with it.
Yeah, you remember she was in the Gambia. She came on to talk about...
Oh, got you.
Yeah, I did see that, Brother Paul.
Oh, you're aware then. You're aware. Good. Well, I just want to send out my condolences to her. And the reason why I'm in, because I know you had her on your show.
Mm-hmm.
She was originally a British citizen, and then she returned to the Gambia. And she was doing some formidable work in that, I think by her profession, she was a lawyer.
Yes.
And she took those skills to the Gambia to assist returnees and people interested in purchasing land. And she articulated a lot of that when she came onto your program. You gave her that opportunity and the space to do that. I had previously heard her on radio stations here as well, and I know that she absolutely was one of the good ones and doing the real work, you taking her skills back. And I know at one time, I think she articulated this on your program also, that she was doing something which is close to my heart, which I think should be done. You know, challenging these countries in Africa to be for returnees and to be recognized under the constitution, because that's important. It's all right returning to Africa, but you know, how are you recognized? Are you recognized as a tourist? Are you recognized as an expat? Are you what is your status? Do you have to have someone who actually lives there to support you when you want to buy land or property, et cetera, et cetera? But she was challenging some of that. So she was really on it. What I heard today, we'd be quite in contact with people in the Gambia on almost every day. And what I hear is that she may have been murdered by someone she was aware of and knew. Apparently that person's hanged himself in. I don't know if it was a worker or someone who was assisting her or whatever, but what we do know, he's handed himself in. It's just very tragic, you know?
Okay.
Very, very tragic. You know? But yeah, I just thought I'd... obviously, you're aware.
Yeah, I did see it.
Yeah, it's good order, because she was one of the, like I said, she was one of the good ones, honest and decent. And, you know, it's painful that, you know, when there are people like this, so straight and honest and, you know, prepared to sacrifice their time. I think it was, last week was her 60th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And two of her daughters traveled back to Gambia to give her a surprise. And then, you know, this happens, so...
Yeah, well, the good thing is at least the individual turned himself in. I don't know whether it was domestic or what, you know, what was going on, but yeah, I did see it.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it's just... your efforts, the mere fact that she was on this program and she was doing the work, it just plays a role in, you know, a real role in some of us who are really, you know, think on that basis that no matter what we become in this life, lawyer, doctor, whatever profession we follow, it's important to give something back in any form, you know, like absolutely what you're doing. And I do commend you, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. I really, bottom of my heart, commend what you do. The time, the dedication, because it's so important, man. It's so important. You know, every little bit counts, and it encourages everybody to push on. You know what I mean, and not make excuses and do their little bit, and we will get there. So, you know, thank you for giving her the time and giving me the time, and doing what you do.
Thank you, sir.
Take care.
All right, Richard.
Yes, yes.
Wait a minute, Richard. You see what I'm talking about, Richard?
Yeah.
let's go to Detroit. Detroit, are you there?
Hey, Brother Elliot.
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me, Brother Richard?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Hey, I was really looking forward to hearing Dr. Taylor, but I'll tune in next time. And I listen to you all a lot. And I know Brother Elliot handled his own business, but I'm calling here to Brother Elliot. I got a trick question for you. I want to share this with you. It's a trick question, okay?
Okay.
I want you to tell me what these people, what these things have in common, okay? You ready?
Okay.
Worldwide technology. It's made about $12 billion in revenue, got about 5,000 employees. Act One Group got about $4 billion in revenue, 2,000 employees. Bridgewater Interiors, about $2 billion in revenue, 2,400 employees. Coca-Cola Beverages Florida, not just Coca-Cola, this is a LLC. So it's owned by Troy Taylor. About $1 billion revenue, about 5,000 employees. I'm just going to stop at the fifth one, Modular Assembly, $1 billion revenue, about 300 employees. What all of them got in common?
I don't know.
Yeah, you do. You don't think you know, but you do. They all black owned.
Okay.
Now, we can still go through the billions to get the top 10. I know you don't express it in these terms, Brother Elliot, but for folks who are talking about what black folks ain't got, can't do, can't do, often they don't even know where the people that are black-owned businesses, that multi-billion dollar business, where they are, or even if they exist.
Yeah, okay, I agree.
Those names I'm just sharing with you, you know where many of these emerge from? Mutual aid society.
Okay.
Yeah. So just what you've been saying, and these are where they are today, the diversity of black business and investment, and where this money, and I know that's not the point you're making, Brother Elliot, but I'm saying for those who do think billionaires and billionaire grossing billions of dollars may be somehow useful for black folks who may employ it strategically, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
For those who may think that, there are huge resources there, and some people have been utilizing them and continue to utilize them in strategic ways. So just because a person may not know them doesn't mean they don't exist. But often folks who will be ignorant of these things will pretend because they don't know them that they don't exist. And they may challenge you on their existence, like you got to give them a catechism. They're hidden in plain sight. Billions of them. Not billions of them. I'm talking about worth billions. Black-owned. Employed black folks. We don't start with churches, and none of those folks athletes. You see what I'm saying?
Okay.
And none of them are in churches. You see? So it's what you were saying and what you were saying, this tradition, and you focus on mutual aid societies, where they emerge from, the insurance company, because we had to bury our own. We didn't make the insurance just to rip off people. They wouldn't bury us. So it was just so that your mother or father could have a lot in a cemetery, a segregated cemetery. It's where our business sense came out of, and so many other places. But often you have people that talk about blacks as if the only folks out here doing things are folks that are or in a position to assist, from reparations to whatever you got going on at the PTA, that these black businesses don't exist. And I mean conscious folks who may run them and be willing to assist and have assistance, since A.G. Gaston, the black bank owner that bankrolled much of what was going on in the South, especially in Alabama, during the civil rights movement. A.G. Gaston owned the banker, the black banker.
Right.
Or W.T.R.M. Howard. If you don't know him, then you don't know the black history you think you know. That medical doctor who bankrolled from, take your pick, from in Mound Bayou, the Deacons for the Fence. But he's a businessman, all the way to the Peyton brothers who really helped establish Black Harlem. You see, they're there. They're hidden in plain sight. So I know you don't need no assist from Motor City. But when I
You got to come on, though. You got to come on because it's a couple of your books I'd really like you to help develop.
I appreciate it, brother, and I will, but I'm dealing with some things here. But when I hear Brother Elliot, I'm kind of exasperated because he's trying to explain something that's so obvious. It's like for some people, and I think Brother Elliot gets like this sometimes, it's like trying to explain water to a fish. It's so obvious, but I got to explain it to you, or you want me to listen? Come on, now. So I just wanted to read some of those names, and maybe other folks know them, and there are many more of these black-owned businesses that employ black folks as well. But it may be a reason, Brother Elliot, they may not be advertising as such every day, all day on BMO, I'm going to stop there. Like I said, you don't need no assist from me. But when I heard that, I'm like, come on, brother. Yeah, that's so, it's so obvious what you're saying, brother. And I don't want you to feel exasperated about it, because it is obvious, and your point is well made and historically grounded and a powerful one. And it's also the one that most, that many black folks are living and will assist in moving us in a, in a direction that's going to be productive and also toward, and we've done this even without reparations and going to do it with reparations, making a way out of no way. That's just not a slogan for so many of us. And so I just wanted to share some of that with you. And I hope you receive it in the spirit intended. It's half tongue in cheek because you as right can be. But you, that's what I mean. You don't need no assist from me. But I'm just, come on, man. Come on.
Thanks for your contribution, Professor. Like Richard said, we got to get you on.
We'll be in touch.
You let me know.
I want you to know I'm out here listening, brother, and I'm really enjoying it. I listen as much as I can. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for what you are providing to people. Really appreciate it.
Talk to you soon. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.
Richard, that's Earl yes, Henderson. Sir. Oh, man. He surprised me there when he jumped on the line.
I keep on asking because... you know, I use his books like a Bible.
But listen, before we go, I'm going to give out the lineup on time. And Richard, I'll talk to you about it because it's a new program that's going to be coming on soon. And I think the listening audience will be anxious to hear from it. But we'll talk about that. I'll kind of. Once I get all the T's dotted and the I's crossed, I'll kind of announce it to the listening audience. Before we leave tonight, line up on time for an Awakening Media. As it stands right now, African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. Always interesting topics and dialogue on African Perspectives. That's Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Later on in the week, on Thursday, Mississippi on the Move. The Black Liberation Movement in Mississippi with Brother Patrick Lumumba. Brother Dubsack, Rodney Lowe, Sister Crystal Denise, the whole gamut of hosts on Mississippi on the Move. That's Thursdays, 9 to 10 on Time for an Awakening Media. That's 8 to 9 Central Time. Fridays, Time for Awakening is back from 8 until. On Saturdays, Elders of Sankofa with Dr. Janine James is host from 7 to 9, and then on Sunday, Time for an Awakening is back from 7 until. And hopefully next week we'll have it nailed down for Dr. James Lance Taylor to come on. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. Play such a small part of the thing that they'll soon be right at the heart of. My little Tommy, he said he wants to be a fireman.
save the children. To save the children.